Well, friends, how are you doing these days with people? It's funny how people are with people. Have you seen these t-shirts? I've seen these t-shirts. Here's the first one. I'm not going out today. It's a bit too people-y. I don't hate people. I just feel better when they're not around. And maybe my favorite, I don't like morning people, or mornings, or people. It's funny, right? But it's tragic, yeah? It's the humorous side of our polarized world that we live in right now. It's trying to make light of how deeply individualistic we have become and how overwhelmingly materialistic we are now as a culture. And it resulted largely in this sense of being afraid of strangers, of people that we don't know or people that we have somehow othered, made on the other side of where we are in our perspectives on life. Just some of the data, you guys, and even if these numbers are remotely close, they're alarming. And from 2010 to 2013, people spent about 6.5 hours a week in the United States with friends. Across the board, about 6.5 hours it averaged out. By the time 2019 was here, that number had dropped over 30% to 4 hours a week. 6.5 to 4 hours a week. By 2021, it was less than 3 hours a week that people spend just together with friends. In 2023, our Surgeon General here declared that the United States was in what he called a loneliness epidemic. It is not normal how we function right now as a culture, so polarized. It is not healthy, and it is a perfect time, I believe, for us to reimagine one of the central values of the Christian faith, that of hospitality. Biblical hospitality. I heard the story from a missionary over in Mozambique not too long ago. His name was Zach. And he said part of what they do over there to collect taxes is make you get stickers on your car to make sure you have paid all the taxes. There is a radio tax that he needed to have a sticker on his car for. And he was trying to find the only place that you could purchase the sticker, which was the radio station. Driving all around, trying to get advice and figure out where in the world to get this, stopped multiple times and had to pay the fine because he didn't have the sticker, even though he had already paid the price for the sticker. Finally stopped at the gas station and talked it through, him and his friend, with two of the employees that were there. The employees gave him the long version of how to get to the radio station, which was a very complicated, but they thought, okay, I think I have this in my head. We'll try to do it. To their great surprise, to Zach's great surprise, the two employees followed him out to his car. To their shock, they jumped in the car. And then they answered the question that Zach and his friends' wide eyes were asking. They said, "You're never going to find it. We'll go together." Friends, that's hospitality. Finding the space for others, creating that space. I wonder if you would, to show honor to the reading of God's word, hear this central passage of Genesis chapter 18 as I read it for us here today. Let's stand together. Genesis chapter 18, verses 1 through 15. Oh, back it up. There we go. Yeah. The Lord appeared to Abraham by the oaks of Mamre, as he sat at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. He looked up and saw three men standing near him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent entrance to meet them and bowed down to the ground. Next slide. There it is. He said, "My Lord, if I find favor with you, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. Let me bring a little bread that you may refresh yourselves, and after that you may pass on, since you have come to your servant. So they said, do as you have said. And Abraham hastened into the tent to Sarah and said, make ready quickly 3 measures of choice flour, knead it, and make cakes. Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the servant, who hastened to prepare it. Then he took curds and milk and the calf that he had prepared and set it before them. And he stood by them under the tree while they ate. They said to him, where is your wife Sarah? And he said, there, in the tent. Then one said, I will surely return to you in due season, and your wife Sarah shall have a son. And Sarah was listening at the tent entrance behind him. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, after I have grown old and my husband is old, shall I be fruitful? The Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, shall I indeed bear a child now that I am old? Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? At the set time, I will return to you in due season, and Sarah shall have a son. But Sarah denied him, saying, I didn't laugh, for she was afraid. He said, yes, you did laugh. Amen. You may have a seat. Okay, friends, God spoke over Abram in chapter 12, a few chapters before this. And ever since then, we've been discovering this brand new character on the scene, Abram and Sarah. Who is the kind of person that God wants to partner with? Who is this family? Why did they get chosen? And we're discovering what kind of partner they are. And in chapter 17, just before this, God makes this covenant with Abraham, uniquely in the world, of this mark of circumcision that is the covenant between him and Abram. The Jewish understanding of what is going on in these pivotal, instrumental passages of the narrative have it be that the foremost attribute that characterizes Abram, as we see it here in chapter 18, is what's often called radical hospitality. He is a man of radical hospitality. They are a family of radical hospitality. The story reveals that it was God who was visiting him. But if you caught it in verse 2, the story needs us to see that Abram saw these people not as God, but as 3 men. And he bows before them. You might get tricked thinking he was calling them God. He said, Lord, but that is the term in Hebrew that is more associated with like Lord of the household or along those lines. It's not Yahweh. It's a different term. So we're set to examine then, what is biblical hospitality? What is biblical hospitality? Well, I'll put it to you this way. Biblical hospitality is A plus B, that's a B, equals L. A plus B equals L. It's, first of all, hospitality is A. It's exactly what you think of when you think of hospitality. Seeing the need, doing your best to seek to meet the need. So there's a need that is present as Abram is dealing with these 3 strangers who are traveling along the road. These 3 visitors. And the scriptures, of course, would understand, as the rest of the world at that time would have understood, this type of behavior is a given for your family and for your friends. That's not the radical part. The radical part is that it's happening with strangers. As reminded again that at this time, 3,000 or so years ago, when this was happening, There were many different cultures throughout the ancient Near East that would have the top three, just like God would give to Abram throughout the law and the rest of the time. You take care. Cultures are set to take care. You have to take care of your poor, your widow, and your orphan. There's a special need for that, and many cultures outside of Abram and God talked to, would have that exact same mantra, those exact same values. What makes the scriptures unique and where they go in a different direction is they add the fourth, the stranger. It's often called the foreigner. So take care of your poor, your widow, your orphan, and the stranger or the foreigner, what we would call the immigrant. That's the different type of mentality that God is bringing to this for a variety of reasons that we'll continue to explore as the summer unfolds. That's biblical hospitality. Romans chapter 12, verse 13, you have Paul summing up one of his great arguments about what comprises the Christian faith and how are we to behave. And he tells his reader in Rome, pursue hospitality to strangers. Carrying on that same thread, keeping an eye out for the foreigner, for the immigrant. That seed of hospitality is planted here within our faith with Abram. And it is filled out with Jesus, which we will take a much closer look at as the summer unfolds. Being able to see the need and then seek to meet it. Seeing requires observation. It requires listening. It requires being with so that you can look and you can hear. To allow our brain space, what's on your brain all day? To allow your brain space to be occupied with the needs of the stranger. Huh. To allow some space in your head to be occupied with. And now in chapter 18 here, as we see this with Abram, it's really easy. They're travelers. They couldn't check in at the Hilton. This is how people, so there's an obvious need. They didn't spend a lot of time trying to discover that. But they had to offer hospitality because they were traveling and their needs were blatant and obvious. And this is where oftentimes hospitality from well-intended people gets off the rails. I think you see it most clearly at Christmas time when eight-year-old boys usually are giving their mom a present. It's often like a skateboard or something like that, firecrackers, whatever. Like, this is what I would want. Of course mom would want it, right? Observation, seeing what the need is, takes time, though, to get ourselves out of our own head and into their space to figure out what would actually be meaningful to you. So we seek, first it requires that we see it. Oftentimes, hospitality, its lowest common denominator and the most beautiful one is food. Eventually, everyone's going to get hungry. And so providing food is one of the best ways in order to start on the hospitality train. We then also, of course, have to seek to do something from it. Now, we're remembering in chapter 18, just before in 17, in the same stretch of time, Abram just underwent a surgery, like a self-surgery of circumcision. He's recovering from this. He's pushing 100 years of age. It's hot, the hottest part of the day. And he is recovering in the shade from all of this. He sees these three men who he does not know, and the scriptures make the point to say that he hurried to go get to them. His world was consumed with the life of these strangers and able to give himself to that and seek their best. In verse 2, that's what it talks about. This whole passage is giving you this hurry-up flavor. Three different times it talks about hurrying. Four different times about go get this, fetch that. It's this movement where it's not a pain for them. It's developing this scene of this is what I want to do most. I'm so after this because this isn't a pain. It's not in my way. I'm not dragging my feet through this. I'm excited about it, and I want to give my best and energetic self to it. And he does this in a way that is in a radical fashion. He underpromises and overdelivers. If you caught it in verse 4 and 5, it's like, hey, sit down, we'll get you some water, we'll get you a little, basically what amounts to a snack, some bread or something. But then he tells his wife to go, Sarah, to go and use this 3 measures of flour. Okay, that translates to about 60 pounds of flour. Bread makers? Yeah, that's about 25 loaves of bread apiece. That's radical. And he goes off and he gets them a calf from his herd. Okay, so he's blowing the whole story out. He's going for it. Abe and Sarah, their hospitality, it reflects the very heart of God. And it's radical and it's beautiful how it comes together. Their seeking of it. I want to tell you a story of how I saw this happen several years ago when I happened to be in Arkansas, of all places. This is called the Thorn Crown Chapel. It's in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And it was born out of a beautiful story. There's a man called Jim Reed, and in 1971, he started planning for his dream retirement home that he was going to build. Being a native of Arkansas, there was this gorgeous view of the Ozarks, and he decided, this is the land. This is where I'm going to do it. This place right here. And as he kind of made the road to get up the hill over there, he noticed that people, we'll call them visitors, even though they were intruders and not the politest of ones, would come up to take a view of the Ozarks and spend time up there and checking it out and taking it in. And instead of getting angry and building a wall, instead of fencing off everything, he paused and he said, Lord, what are you doing here? What are you doing with me in all of this? Could it be, God, that in this land that I'm able to get a hold of is for more than just my personal enjoyment, is for more than just my own satisfaction? And he said that he received this vision of building a glass chapel. He was a man of faith that could extend hospitality to all these people who clearly want to come up and be a part of this incredible view like I had. And like all visions that come from the living God, somehow, some way, it required all of him and depleted him of his resources. That's what visions from God do. They take us to the end of ourselves. And about halfway through construction, they ran out of money. And he drove up one last time to the property to what he was sure was the very last time he would be able to be there. And he said, in telling it, you know, I was kind of embarrassed because this was actually the first time I got on my knees at the space where the chapel was to be. And I got on my knees and I said I was sorry before the Lord and I asked for forgiveness from God and I yelled at God a little bit and I didn't understand what was happening and I just had it all out and let it go and drove away knowing that this was going to be the last time in it. And in classic fashion, of course, once they released the whole thing, some woman from Illinois found out about it and provided a low-interest loan for them to finish the project on this chapel that now has 425 windows, over 6,000 square feet of glass that occupy this thing. I got to visit it, and I'm not a huge architecture person, but it blew me away. Since 1980, when it opened, it's provided hospitality for over 7 million, not intruders, but visitors, extending invitation to them. Well, that's A, that's seeking, that's seeing the need. There's also, this one's a little bit harder, and it can be easily missed, especially in our culture. It's that the guest, of course, is open to what the gift and the offering will be from the host. But biblical hospitality rests on the idea that the host is open and receiving what it is that the guest wants to give. In that sense, hospitality is mutual. Hospitality is mutual, A plus B. Hospitality is mutual. The host, of course, sees that it's going to be a gift one way or the other to provide hospitality, to seek to meet their needs to a stranger. And this was easy for Abram. Like, they need this, they're traveling, and then their relationship starts to develop. They Abram and Sarah receive the gift of being together with these people, meeting people that they have never known, connecting. And they are also open to being to receiving what it is that these people would give to them. Which, if you heard the whole story, it started all over again with that blessing that was originally given to them some 25 years earlier. You're going to have a son who will become a family that becomes a nation that blesses every family on earth. That's what they received by offering hospitality to these people, their life purpose. It's easy to miss, of course, this sense that the host is also going to receive blessing because of our industry, how we live in this concept of hospitality right now. It's the beauty and the beast. Be our guest, be our guest, be our guest. It's all one-sided. Our hotels and whatever else are all set up on the host doing everything and the guest receiving everything. Biblical hospitality is different. It's built on mutuality. I have a gift I'm going to offer to you and initiate, knowing full well that you have a gift and you will that you'll give back to me. I want to make this personal here this morning on a number of levels. And let's talk about first our garden. Friends, we are entering our 10th season of gardening. We built a garden to extend hospitality to our community. Several years ago, we added a playground to that to try to build a bridge, fully recognizing, we get it, people don't want to come into this space as much and be able to interact with who we are as a community. So let's do our best to invite, to extend hospitality to the community that lives around us here in northern Colorado. And over the years, and I get it, I hear it, we hear sometimes, isn't that a bit much to extend hospitality to our neighbors? This gigantic garden that requires staffing and this huge playground that was really expensive and organizing it all right on the edge of the street, not tucked up over here. Well, we've learned a lot in these years. In over 9 growing seasons, we have found out what it says about Northern Colorado. Northern Colorado is hungry, not just for the food, but for the connection. We've been keeping score, and it's like somewhere in the neighborhood of about 2,000 different people touch base with our space, obviously looking for some kind of connection and relationship and opportunity. People come all the time in order to experience that. But don't we want to be able to learn what God would teach us? I feel like we're at a moment where we could do some extraordinary learning, because what we found out about Northern Colorado is they're hungry and eager for connection. What I think we're finding out a little bit concerning Council Tree is that once we've extended hospitality and made the connection, we're not sure what to do next. Boy, there's a lot of connections out there. How do we continue to open that door in order to welcome people in to more personal relationship with each one of us? To join the tribe, so to speak. To be a part of a group where you belong. To give ourselves over to living how God would have us live. You know, it's been a challenge sometimes to even get people, for us to understand even that larger concept of what we're trying to do out there, this big picture of hospitality that develops itself into community. Hospitality understood, once we really get like what's going on in the act of hospitality, the particular of how the hospitality is being driven at, or the mechanism for which it's being driven at, is less important. And the people and the hospitality are far more important. It's not that I like this or I don't like that. It's more like, oh, I see this is us extending hospitality to our community. Therefore, I want to be a part of that. I want to be able to solve that mystery of how it is we continue to extend bridge deeper into the community. I want to ask, church, in chapter 18 of Genesis, this mutual interaction between Abe and Sarah and these visitors, like, who got the biggest blessing? The visitors got a great meal, they're refreshed, but Abe and Sarah had their full purpose in life refreshed. They gave like we always do. We give. And then they were the ones who got the ultimate blessing in that situation. Well, friends, when hospitality, like Abe and Sarah, received from these people as they were offering it to them, a mutuality of community is born. And it results, this is going to make sense in 1 second, it results in growth or transformation, however you want to say that. It results in growth or transformation. The two strangers become something more than they were when they were strangers. They become something more than they were alone. You see, it's clear in the scriptures that when they talk about sin, it's whatever sin is what's isolating us from other people. And whatever the kingdom is, it's what's uniting us with other people. We always see the same pattern throughout the scriptures, all the way back to Abraham, all the way through Jesus. We give to gain. It was huge for them to be hospitable in the way that they were. But they're the ones who gained. We lose in order to find. We die in order to live. And what happens, we see it hit right here in this story, all compacted for us. In chapter 18, we see Sarah laughing. I didn't laugh. Yeah, you did. You've all been in those conversations. Maybe you're the one having the conversation from inside the tent, and somehow the tent walls make you think no one else can hear you. We can hear you. You're right there. This is what's going on in that moment, and Sarah can hear it, and she laughs. A plus B equals growth or laughter. Friends, her laugh, it gets close in English, the translation there, but her laugh, it not only the nature of the laugh, but what she's laughing at is far more direct and clear in the Hebrew. She's laughing like this. Like when you have that drink of water in your mouth and most of it goes through your nose. It's one of those laughs. And she's laughing. She's laughing. It hints at it there in the English, but if we were just to do a direct, bold, raw translation, it would be far more something like, we are going to get it on again. She's laughing about this idea that she would be having sex again with this centenarian. That's what she's laughing at. That's what's hilarious about this. And friends, growth, the resurrection part, the life after all that part, it often comes with the, are you joking? That's ridiculous. It can't be that good. We're going to start that part of our life over again. Well, Abraham and Sarah expressed this radical hospitality and received the ultimate kingdom surprise of laughter. They received the ultimate prize of laughter, of joy, and we hold this as central to who our God is and what our God wants to do. In Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2, this is the frame for our hospitality. God says, hey, living things, I see you, and I'm going to provide for you this planet of hospitality. It's beyond what any of you would ever have imagined on your own. And I'm going to give it to you for you to live on and enjoy. But you got to learn how to do it together, to cooperate, to share, to get along with strangers. And you got to be the initiators of that, taking into care their concerns, not just your own. And we'll be together and do this. God gave them the garden. In chapter 2, he tells Adam, tend this thing. Create this thing, and we're set forth a motion, this concept of us being co-creators with God, doing something in some kind of mutuality with God, this whole life that we're given. Well, hospitality recognizes, I believe, the deepest needs in each one of us. Everyone you meet wants to be seen. Everybody that you meet has a gift that they want to be received and celebrated. Hospitality is doing just that. I'm taking the time to see you. I'm taking the time to check your gift and celebrate it. My wife Heather and I have been learning a lot about this. And our journey more specifically towards this started about 7-8 years ago on how it is as our kids were starting to graduate high school and life was shifting, about how we would become a people of hospitality or try to extend ourselves in different ways. And the short of the long of it is for the last 3 years, we have had this delightful young man from Guatemala living with us named Jairon, and he just moved out yesterday. It's all good, and it was the right next step and whatnot. And these last 3 years have been nothing short of a brilliant adventure, a kingdom adventure for us. As it goes exactly on cue, as I look back, it's like, yeah, we thought we were going to be doing you this big, huge favor, and it turns out you really did a gigantic favor for us. I remember in our first year with him and one of his cousins were with us teaching us Guatemalan card games, and we couldn't understand, like, one time when the deck was done and the game was over and there was no declared winner. As North Americans, we're like, the game is not over until somebody wins. That's what means the game's over. No. We play a game. So you mean the game is just to be together at the table talking? Never forget the time when Heather and I had another really full week, and we pouring ourselves out doing whatever, and they lots of different members of their family also lived with us over the last couple of years, and that's how it rolls. And some of them were like, hey, we'd love to see you again. Can we come over tonight? It's Sunday night, end of the week. We're like, we just need a breath. And we're like, we're learning about boundaries, and so no, you can't come over. Twenty minutes later, they're pouring in through the garage. You said no, but we come anyway. 10 minutes later, we're like, yeah, this is exactly what we needed. We're being refreshed. We're learning. I could talk about community all day long, but they were demonstrating it and showing me what it really, really was. And I tell you, it wasn't easy. There was a lot of times that were frustrating. And in some of our more raw moments, Heather and I would talk to each other, and we both had the same thing came to us. Both of us was like, didn't you imagine that at some point we'd be at this dinner and he would be standing up in perfect English giving a great speech about how much we meant to him? And we were like, yeah, I kind of did imagine that's how this thing would end. And then we had to recognize after a while, that speech is never coming. A speech isn't going to come. And in the way that the living God likes to surprise us, I just want to share that it did come. But it was only 8 words long. As we were moving him out, it was very clear that he wanted to tell us something. And in 8 words, he simply said, I love you, miss. I love you, Bert. And he gave us both a hug, and we found something new in that whole story. The need and the mutuality resulted in laughter in our growth. And friends, it's exactly what Jesus is doing as he pursues table fellowship one last time. At the Last Supper, when he gathered his disciples and he took the bread and pursued them with his own love, and he gave thanks for the bread and he broke it and he gave it to them, letting them know that this is the way of life. What we are given, we give thanks for and we give it away, and that's where we find the blessing as we make our contributions to this world and follow in the pattern that Jesus has given us. In the same way, he took the cup after supper, And he poured it out and he let them know, this is how things are. This is the new covenant, the new agreement between God and humanity, and it's in my blood. It cannot be changed. It cannot be altered. This is the way of things. It is often, Paul reminds us, as often as we eat this bread and we drink this cup, we proclaim his death, the way that he showed us, and his life resurrected again. Y'all are Christ followers. All Christ followers are warmly invited to be a part of this communion. Take a piece of the bread and then dip it into the cup. There's two cups that will be before you. One of them is silver and it has juice in it. The other is a wine glass and it has wine in it. They're both his blood. There'll be three stations in front of you. You're encouraged to take your time, to allow yourself a moment to receive here in the silence what it is that God would have for you as you present yourself before the living God once again to receive his way and his gift for us. Churches, you're ready. Come forward to receive.